the December 10th, 2015 meeting of the Chicago State University Board of Directors will, Board of Trustees will reconvene into open session. Mr. Cage, will you facilitate the election of officers?
Yes. Calling for the nominations for the election of the board chairman. Are there any nominations?
I nominate Anthony Young.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Patrick, have to call it. Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Fation?
So the motion carries. Call for nomination for the position of board vice chair.
I nominate Trustee Joyce.
Second.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Trustee Fation?
Yes.
Motion carries. Call for nominations for the position of board secretary.
I nominate Michael Curtin.
Second.
Trustee Fation?
Yes.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Motion carries.
I think the next item on the agenda is to approve the minutes from our September 18th, 2015 and October 8th, 2015 board meetings. Are there any comments or corrections to the minutes from the September 18th or October 8th board meetings? If there are no questions or comments, do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Fation?
Yes.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Yes, I'm asking now for a motion to approve the 2015 executive session minutes prior to the December 10, 2015 resolution. I need a motion.
Is this, where are we?
We're on executive session minutes.
Top of the page.
Down here.
Oh, you missed that one.
Okay,
it's 2013.
Okay, I was here.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right. All right. What's the 2013?
Okay. Okay, I'm gonna, right now we're gonna set the meeting dates for 2016. I move that those dates be March 4th, 2016, May 6th, 2016, June 24th, 2016, and September 16th, 2016, and December 9th, 2016. Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Fation?
Yes.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I thought that was going to be part of the Yes. So now we'll have the report from Academic and Student Affairs. Trustee Joyce.
Dr. Henderson, please.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
Trustees, Mr. President, Mr. General Counsel. Today I have two resolutions before you for your consideration. The first one is to grant tenure status to Dr. Cherise Johnson, PhD, Associate Professor in the Department of Pharmacy Practice in the College of Pharmacy. Dr. Johnson has submitted her portfolio. She has met the requirements, and input has been given from the chairperson of the department, the dean of the college, and the faculty members. The department personnel criteria team, as well as the university criteria department. So I'm asking you for consideration to grant her tenure.
All right, is there a motion to approve this resolution?
So move.
Second.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Fation?
Yes.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
I believe there's a second tenure resolution that's going to be presented by Trustee Zoller.
There is. Mr. Chairman, may I have permission to go out of order?
Yes.
Thank you. Pursuant to the authority of the Chicago State University Board of Trustees, I am honored and would like permission of the board to confer tenure on the following individual: Wayne D. Watson, PhD, Department of Doctoral Studies, College of Education.
So move.
Second.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Fation?
Yes.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Is Dr. Johnson here?
Yes, she is. I'd like to introduce her.
Oh, very good.
Thank you. I'm Dr. Cherise Johnson.
Could you say a few words?
Actually, Dr. Johnson was one of the founding members of the College of Pharmacy. When seven people were recruited to start the College of Pharmacy, she was one of them, and she has done a lot of work to move that college forward. Dr. Johnson?
I saw you crying, and I thought to myself, we better check here and make sure this is a good thing.
So. Good morning, everybody. It certainly is a wonderful thing, and normally I'm not overcome with emotion, but as we reach a time in our college's journey, I'm very blessed and fortunate to have been such a part of a wonderful university and college, and it's with honor that I accept the tenure position. So thank you very, very much.
Congratulations.
Congratulations, Dr. Johnson and Dr. Watson. Congratulations. Second resolution?
Please.
Second resolution is to ask the board for your consideration to approve to extend the 2012 through 2015 University Strategic Plan through December 2016.
And the idea for the extension is to give the incoming president, Calhoun, an opportunity.
Absolutely.
To have input.
Yes, sir. The existing plan ends December 2015, and so rather than have a team start without the input of the president, we thought it would be best to extend it so that he could review it and make some decisions about next steps.
I agree.
Okay.
Okay, then the resolution is presented. Is there a motion?
So move.
Second.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Fation?
Yes.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Okay, the motion to approve the strategic plan extension has passed. Enrollment management, or you get?
Trustee Joyce, I just, a part of my report today is to highlight a few of our professors who have written books this quarter. Before you, you have a couple of copies of the different books. We've had 5 professors who published this quarter, and it's important for us to showcase the talent of our faculty and to highlight the talent that is in the classrooms as well. So we have Dr. April Bernard, who's here, and she's just going to say a few words to you, Dr. Bernard.
Thank you. Good morning and seasoned greetings to everyone. My name is April Bernard. I'm an assistant professor in criminal justice here at Chicago State. I've been here since 2012. Prior to that, I was at the University of the West Indies as the deputy dean of the Faculty of Social Sciences. My study, the book is entitled Transforming Justice, Transforming Lives, Women's Pathways to Desistance from Crime. And the book shares the results of my interviews with 10 women who had criminal histories and have transformed their lives through stewardship, community engagement, and supportive relationships. All of the women were members of CSPIRE, worked as violence interrupters in the community, and 6 of the 10 women were also actively engaged in faith-based organizations, which helped to facilitate their transformation. Two concepts I discuss in the book are other mothering and universal social concern. And universal social concern is presented as an innate desire that all of us have to minister to other people, to support other people, to care for other people. And that this desire is just as natural as our desire to meet our self-interest. And in this book, we talk about transformative justice as being a result of that innate desire to care for other persons and make transformation not only at the individual level, not only within communities through outreach and changing lives as these women did with other people through CSPIRE, but also in addressing structural violence and issues at the structural level or the level of society. So I so appreciate these few minutes to discuss the book, and I'm happy to speak more later. Thank you.
Dr. Daniel Black.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Daniel Block. I am a professor of geography here. I've been here since 1999. I am also the director of the Neighborhood Assistance Center, which is housed in the Geography, Sociology, History, African American Studies, and Anthropology Department. When I came here in 1999, after I grew up in Evanston, but then had moved away for grad school, I had been studying milk. And it sounds kind of funny, maybe, but I looked at the history of how Chicago got its milk and how it was protected back in the early part of the 20th century, how that had to do with the history of public health in the city, that sort of thing. And at the same time, I did a lot of work. I'd worked professionally as a cartographer, a map maker, and I was trying to figure out how to combine that interest in food and food history and cartography when, and so I was going to some community meetings, and a community leader on the west side said to me, well, you know, we know that there seems to be a difference in access to fresh fruits and vegetables in the neighborhood they were living in Austin, and say the neighborhood next door in Oak Park. But we really haven't gotten that down on paper. We haven't done a research study of that. And I wound up being part of a group that was eventually funded that included, it was called the Chicago Food Systems Collaborative, eventually included 4 universities, 5 community organizations, and we did a study of Oak Park and in Austin looking at food access. That led to a study funded by the Chicago Community Trust of the 6-county area looking at food access, or what we now often call food deserts. And then, in that, for about 10 years, I've been studying food access, food deserts. It's been mainly what I've focused on. And then somebody came to me and said, you know, that work in, on milk makes me think that maybe you'd be a good person to write a history of Chicago told through food. And that is how I came to write, or came to co-write, Chicago a food biography. I eventually decided my work here at CSU didn't leave me quite enough time to write an entire history of Chicago, so I brought on Howard Rosing, who is an anthropologist at DePaul, as my co-writer. And actually, this book has been a lot of fun. We focus on, among other things, the history of food access. So, you know, food deserts didn't just start when the sort of term came out about 10 years ago. There's been folks concerned about food access since the 1920s and even earlier, especially in the African American communities of the South Side. But it just was been a lot of fun to study Chicago through studying food, looking at old restaurants, looking at our famous dishes, as well as how by looking at food, by studying food, you can bring out the history of things like segregation and inequality in Chicago as well. So thank you very much.
Dr. Lionel Kimball was here earlier. He is a professor in the history department. He had to go. He's actually on sabbatical, but he came in before he had to chaperone his daughter's trip. However, he shared his book, and he said if you, it's on Bronzeville, and he would be happy to discuss it with you at any time. So just wanted to share that with you. And then Dr. Crystal Laura is one of our professors in our Doctorate of Education program, and she's also written a book, interestingly enough, on women and, I mean, young men in prisons. And so she'll share a little bit about her book as well. Dr. Laura.
Thanks. Hi, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, and thank you for inviting me. So as the provost said, my name is Crystal Laura, and anybody who's paying attention to the world around us knows that here in the U.S. we have an incarceration problem. We have 2.3 million people who are locked up. We have 5% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's incarcerated. Most people have read Michelle Alexander's masterful book, so we are sort of aware of the fact that incarceration is a real issue. And so I organize my work, my teaching, my research, my service, and my work over in the College of Education around incarceration prevention through education. So I do that in three ways. I do that through preventative work. I do that by supporting families and people, students in particular, who are locked up. And then I also do reentry work. So my preventative work happens through the College of Education. I'm an associate professor of Ed Leadership in doctoral studies. Welcome to our crew, by the way. My work in the College of Education in doctoral studies is really focused on exposing teachers, principals, and folks on the road toward the superintendency to the notion of the school to prison pipeline. So the ways in which schools facilitate the process by which certain young people, particularly young people of color, are moved from schools to jails and prisons. And the book that the provost is mentioning was sort of founded in that tradition. It's about the school to prison pipeline, really trying to name it and map it and help people see what it means beyond the metaphor. So the support for families who are experiencing the school to prison pipeline or who have reached this tragic end is also part of my labor. And then finally, reentry work happens as a volunteer teacher at a high school on the west side for formerly incarcerated men and women. In addition to my day job doing the work with the principals, I also try to make sure that I support people who did not get an opportunity to get a high school diploma and who then come onto universities. My very first day, quick little story, and then I'll sit down because you have a lot of business. My very first day on campus, I started here in 2011. I was sort of trying to figure out the campus. And I ran into one of my students from the high school who'd enrolled here at Chicago State after working with us at the high school. So I really see connections between education and criminal justice, juvenile justice. And my work is really trying to disentangle those relationships and to support people who get caught up along the way. Thank you so much for having me.
Another one of our professors, Dr. Pancho McFarland, has also authored a book. He's an associate professor of sociology, and his book is entitled The Chicano Hip Hop Nation. You also have, some of you have copies of those, and it's from Michigan State University Press, 2013. So I wanted to share that with you and highlight the success of our faculty. And we will continue to do that, and we hope to really publicize the work that they're doing externally so that the world knows about our authors at Chicago State University. Questions?
No questions? All right. Okay. The next part of your report would be, or is it enrollment management ready to
yes.
go now?
Thank
okay,
you.
Dr. Carol Cartlett, please.
Good morning, Chairman Young, trustees, president, and CSU community. For this meeting, I submitted two reports. One of them was what I would consider to be a strategic enrollment report. When we had our last board meeting, one of the things that I was asked by the board was to talk more about how are we going to get to where we need to be with enrollment. And so I submitted that particular report to you. It outlines about 20 different ways that I see us as an institution working through specific pathways to reach out to students and making those pathways seamless and unique experiences for the students that will be moving through them. And of course, the quality behind that process is also really important, which is what I also described in that report. I didn't want to get into any more details about that, but I do want to speak with others about it and vet some of those ideas through you. Did anybody have any comments about it?
That's great.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Thank you.
I'm obviously pleased. I think this is a real step in the right direction, and to have some kind of really coordinated plan to go after the for me, the first-year students. I know the transfer students are important. I just am a big believer that the campus is better served when there is a real, honest freshman class here every year. I think it serves tradition. So I'm glad to see it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. I will then, what I wanted to then was make a transition to talk a little bit about how we are doing with enrollment. And I shared with the board yesterday some statistics on how we are doing for summer. And I bring this particular data to mind because I think that it can show how some of the work that we're doing in the Office of Admissions and Recruitment, how we are making impacts that are improving the process of getting students here. For example, overall for undergrad applications for spring, we have 2.9% more this spring than last spring, as of Monday morning, this data. The total number of accepted students is up by 58 students over last spring. That's 23% for spring. The number of transfer students who have applied for spring 2016 is up by 94, which is 15% higher than where we were last spring. And more notably is something that I would like to call an incomplete file number, which is the number that we have today is 537 versus 695 last year. And what that means is that we have worked with those files, those students, our communication, and our strategies are helping these students in process better, quicker, and we're getting them through the pipeline. So we're literally performing at 22% better this year than last year, even with those files. And I want to talk about that at the pipeline to let you know that the theory that I've provided and the strategies are good, but also at the same time, my team and I are working on the tactics and the processes and the data, and working with technology to improve things, because that's going to be the other piece that helps us move forward successfully. And then just as an update for spring enrollment, for the entire population, as of today, we are 3% higher with our continuing, with our full population, actually. We have, let's see, how many more students? 102 more students registered today than we did 1 year ago today. And that, I think, is should be contributed to a variety of new and renewed integration, co-partnering, and processes that have been developed between departments and across campus in order to engage our students, to get them to register for spring, and to make the message that CSU is here and we are going to be here and they need to get their classes. So I'm pleased to report that's where we are today as well. Did anybody have any other questions?
I'd like you to tell the board and the folks in the audience about a recent visit high school. And strongly encourage your presence in the high schools throughout the area.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for reminding me about that. What happened last Friday, we spent, this is a great example of a model of how the recruitment and outreach team is working. And I think it's a good example. We had a meeting that was set up to go to Wendell Phillips High School. And we made that appointment probably 2 months ago. And since that appointment, we've been checking in. And the idea was to get back to having the students at that institution talk about CSU as an option, just like at any other institution, of course. But we worked very closely with our alumni team. Fannie McCullough, who is on the alumni board, she was also part of this project. What we did is we went to Wendell Phillips, and we were told before we got there that there were 7 students interested in coming to CSU. And we actually had their names, their documents, and their information before we got there. So when the team arrived, the team included myself, Nancy Bhatia, who is the director of admissions. We had an advisor from First Year Experience, and we also had a financial aid advisor. We came as a team, we went there, we got to work with 2 classrooms full of senior students. And as I said, when we got there, we knew that there were 7 students interested. After meeting and presenting to those groups of students, we ended up walking out of the building about 3.5 hours later with 30 applications for fall. And when I say 30 applications for fall, I mean that paperwork was completed, transcripts were on their way. The counselors that we were working with at Wendell Phillips, she had access to all of that information. So what we did in partnership was we provided a very comfortable, seamless way for us to get exposure, for us to talk one-on-one with those students, and for us to leave with an impact in our hands. Nancy has been reaching out to those students one by one, and we're looking forward to having some of them come, and the majority of them we would love to have here in the fall. So that has been the approach that we're working on. We are trying to be much more out in front and going forward to the schools, to be in the schools. We had a similar event that we held about a month ago at East Chicago Central High School in Indiana, where we again had a CSU day. That particular event was even more broad, where we did not necessarily come there with applications and knowing that the students were coming, but what we came there with was a full truckload of CSU people. We had representatives from all the colleges. We brought them. It was convenient and nice and a wonderful way to promote and present CSU to an institution that hasn't really worked closely with us. It was a great example of partnering across the university and building relationships. And I wanted to share that, as these are examples of what have been successful that we want to continue to do. And it's a pleasure to actually get out there to talk face-to-face with the leaders and be a part of the community and learning about Chicago and this area, the high schools.
It must have been fun to be at Wendell Phillips celebrating their first Chicago Public School state championship football team.
You know what? It was a wonderful, wonderful time there. Oh,
great,
yes.
For them.
A lot of people walking tall in the hallways and the staff. Very proud. They're proud.
Rightfully so.
Yes.
Any further comment or questions? Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work, please.
Thank you.
This concludes the Academic Affairs Committee report.
We're ready for finance and audit. Trustee Zoller.
Thank you. Mr. Lucy, if you'd like to give us the financial affairs update, please.
Thank you, Trustee Zoller. Good morning.
Good morning.
Chairman Young, trustees, President Watson, students, faculty, staff, fellow administrators. We continue to operate without a state appropriation as the state continues to be an impasse. However, in order to ensure the fiscal sound operations of Chicago State University, we manage cash on a daily basis. We control costs, making sure that we are talking to vendors as relates to payment obligations, making every effort to accelerate our receivables in terms of the receipts of those cash payments. And to give you an update, I now will show you the current cash position and where we project out for the next 90 days. You should have a copy before you. If we look at our current cash balance, and that's the section one, we show our net cash in banks of almost $12.5 million. And we reduce from that our restricted obligations, which are restricted for various campus projects. And that's restricted cash of $3.4 million, gives us a total line A net unrestricted cash balance of $9 million. And what we're doing is projecting out for the next 90 days through the end of February 28, 2016. We look at our total projected inflows of cash. So that's line B, total projected collections of $24.6 million. And from that, we have expended or projected expenditures, including payroll, because roughly 80% of our budget consists of our human services. So we have an obligation to ensure that we meet our payroll obligations to make sure that everyone gets paid without interruption. So including payroll and other obligations, we have total projected expenditures of $32.4 million. And that gives us a net cash position at the end of February of $1.257 million. So if we compare that to last year, looking at the number from last year being $17.8 million, the difference there is basically the fact that last year we had a state appropriation and this year we do not. We're hopeful because there are current negotiations in the state legislature that we will reduce or eliminate this impasse, and in the future, the state appropriation will be approved without any negative impact to Chicago State University. Are there any questions that relates to that presentation?
No, thank you very much.
And the next item is the audit. The auditors have pretty much completed their field work. They are compiling the audit report. So we are hoping after this next week, we will have a completed financial audit in which to present and be able to distribute to the Board of Trustees. So we are approximately 1 week ahead of where we were last year in the completion of our financial audit. And the compliance audit continues, and we expect to have that resolved and completed in, within the first quarter of 2016.
Thank you. Mr. Lucy, will you please call me when that is finished so we can get together and you can let me know what preliminary findings are?
Yes, Trustee Zoller.
Okay, thank you. Do you want to move on to your action items, sir?
Yes, Trustee Zoller. We have four action items. The first item, we have our Travel Control Board membership, which is through the Illinois Higher Education Travel Control Board. And we have a former employee that is no longer with us, or in the department. So we need authorization to substitute our current director that supports and supervises our purchasing function, Ms. Marcia, we call her Marcy Aranda, and we want approval to substitute her as our new representative for the Travel Control Board membership.
Okay, are there any questions regarding that, please? May I have a motion to approve the Travel Control Board membership resolution?
So moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Fation?
Yes.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes. Mr. Lucy, you may proceed.
Our next resolution we have is for an institution of Ed TPA, which is Teacher Performance Assessment, which is a student fee for teacher candidates. Because effective September 1st, 2015, teacher candidates applying for initial licensing in the state of Illinois are required to take and pass an evidence-based assessment of teacher effectiveness. And in order to make this $300 fee be eligible to be covered by student aid and awards, we need approval in order to go forth so that we can assign that as a special fee to be eligible for student financial assistance.
Okay. Are there any questions about this fee? Hearing no questions, may I ask for a motion to approve the College of Education TPA student fee resolution?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Fation?
Yes.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Lucy.
Our next resolution, because we are required to bring forth to you any recommendations for increases in tuition for the fall of 2016, we have a recommendation to increase the graduate and professional program tuition for the fall of 2016, and that includes the resident master's, the non-resident master's, the resident doctoral, and the non-resident doctoral. And there was a detailed assessment and study conducted by the Tuition Fee and Waiver Committee, and our rate of which our graduate program compared to our undergraduate program tuition fees were not in alignment, so the recommendation is for appropriate increases to better align those tuition rates. So we have this recommendation before you today.
Board members, are there any questions with respect to those tuition increases? Hearing no questions, may I ask for a motion to approve the graduate tuition rate increase resolution?
So moved.
Is there a second, please?
Second.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Fation?
Yes.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Thank you, trustees. And our last resolution is we have for 2016, we have some laboratory fees that relate to new programs, and they're minor $20 fees, but they include the classes Kishwahili 1 and 2 and Geography 4805 and 5805 and 4840, and those are $20 fees that we need to assign to those classes, and we're presenting a resolution that you approve those fees for those classes as presented.
So you have laboratory fees, class fees, and some miscellaneous fees. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Are there any questions with respect to those fees? May I have a motion to approve the fall 2016 laboratory fees, class fees, and miscellaneous fee resolution?
So move.
A second?
Second.
Thank
Trustee
you.
Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Fation?
Yes.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Thank you, trustee. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Lucy.
Thank you.
You've done a very good job under the circumstances. I would now like to ask Dr. Hendricks Mr. Hendricks.
Good morning, trustees.
Good morning.
Hope that you all are doing well, and I'm so pleased to give you an update on our athletics program. So I want to be sure that you know what we're in the business of doing, and so we're in the business of producing and preparing leaders that graduate as champions, because what we want our students to be successful in life. And so with that being said, we have our first photo. This past May, we graduated 47 student athletes, and most of those were on the baseball team, so that's why I had to make sure there were 18 from our baseball team, so you know we'll be rebuilding this year. We did have one student athlete to be drafted professionally for baseball, so we're very excited.
Really, by what team?
About that, Toronto Blue Jays.
Fantastic.
So wanted to provide you with an update on our academics, because that's why we are here. Average GPA for our student athletes is 3.25. We have 75% of our student athletes with a 3.0 or above. That average GPA is up. Put it in context, 5 years ago, the average GPA was about 2.2. And so we are really excited. We've made a lot of headway academically with our student athletes. Other thing that's up, which is great, graduation success rate, and you know the graduation success rate includes transfer students. So our graduation success rate is 72%. Our federal graduation rate is 57%. These are the highest numbers that we've posted for the athletic program. So we're really excited about that. We have 14 teams with a 950 or above on the NCAA academic progress rate. That's that, you hear about it in the news, APR. And that's that rate that if that number is below 930, you will be placed on probation and subject to lose some of your NCAA funding. And so we're pleased that 14 of our 15 teams are not only above 930, they are above 950. Mm. And 950, the perfect score is 1,000. So 950 is the score that the NCAA is moving toward, that threshold level being. So we're already there, and we're doing really well. And those numbers are up. We had six teams with a perfect 1,000. Wow. And so we're really excited about the academic progress of our students. And so we're, again, we're wanting our students, we're helping them go pro in life, because that's what it's about, going pro in life. What's happening on the sports information side, media relations? We're excited. We have 8 broadcasts, and we're partnering with the Office of Public Relations, Communications, and Marketing. And so we have 8 broadcasts on WVON. We have numerous broadcasts on our conference network, the WAC Digital Network. And we've had 13 national televised games so far. And so, and well, a couple that are coming up in men's basketball. So our volleyball team has been on ESPN3 a number of times. Women's soccer, ESPN3. Women's basketball has been on ESPN3. Men's basketball has been on ESPN3, Big Ten Network, Fox Sports 1, and then also ASN, and so the American Sports Network. So we're really, really excited about that. Our fall sports, we want to highlight our volleyball team. This is one of the things that we've done differently this year. We've tried to do promos and have different types of pictures that the students are taking. They want to take that mean shot,
that's,
you know.
Mean. They look
so that's
great.
That mean, you know, that we mean business.
You know? Good.
And we're excited about that. And actually, our volleyball team, they defeated Western Illinois. So that's the first Division I defeat that we've had. We swept Western Illinois 3-0. It's the first one we've had in the last 7 years. So we're really excited, made a lot of progress. We have a new head coach, Brandon Reeves, who comes to us from Concordia College in Selma, and he was a national championship coach in volleyball and women's basketball. So we're really excited to have him join our staff. Student athlete highlights. I want to highlight this young man. Sergio is on our men's tennis team. Sergio is the Chicago State Division I leader in career singles. And so since we've been a Division I team, he is the person that's leading in our singles wins. And so he will be highlighted at our game tomorrow night. His parents will be here. He's an international student, very good student, looking at going on into our graduate programs here at Chicago State. So we're really pleased. He'll be graduating in December. And so we're pleased about that. I want to back up. We also had another highlight of our men's basketball program. They scored 137 points, which set a record here for home game, single game score. So we want to be sure to highlight the 137. It was real. It was there. I was texting it out to people, pictures of the scoreboard, because it really happened. And I want to highlight our cross-country teams coached by Steve Pawinski. And we sent six students to the NCAA regionals that they qualified. So our cross-country programs are moving forward, and we're really excited about that. So it's just a few highlights from the season. And so what's coming up? And so Learfield Sports, we're so excited about the Learfield Sports contract. This is what this does. I break it down from all of the legalese language that we had to, that Patrick had to help us through. But basically, Learfield has bought up Collegiate Licensing Group, Sports Marketing Associates. You know when you go and you buy something that says, I'll pick on my schools, I went to South Carolina and Auburn. So you buy something that says that, and it's got a little iridescent sticker on it, or red and white blue seal on it, and it says Collegiate License, and it's assigned a number to those schools. That's how you collect royalties. Mm-hmm. We were not doing that. So we were not making any money off of anything that said Chicago State. And so this group is a national group. They bought up all those other collegiate groups. So if you're gonna get into the business of talking about royalties and really truly moving us into the Division I level that we are, and making sure that we walk, talk, and act Division I, this is a big step for us. And so we're in the process. So I'll be joined at the hip with Sabrina and Tom and a lot of other people with our startup packet to be sure that we get that in, so that we get that little number that says Chicago State, and we can start collecting royalties. And so we can talk specifics if anyone has any questions about that, but in essence, that's what that means. And so we're really excited about that. We had our student athlete alumni reception that we're starting to really reach out to our student athlete alums to be sure that we bring them back into the fold and we recognize their accomplishments from the past. So we want to do that. We have a number of community partnerships. And you can see there, we have a toy drive tomorrow night. We're playing Valparaiso here on campus, 7:05, tip off. So be sure that you come out, bring a toy. You get in the game for half price. So we're really trying to be sure that we bring toys and have a good cause. And we're partnering with Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated, full disclosure, that is my organization. Very proud Diamond Life member of Zeta, but they have a toy drive every year that they've done in this community for 15 years that is well attended. And so I said, hey, you come to me, we work this out, and they're going to be here. They'll be transforming our lobby at the JCC into Santa's Village. And so we really, really are excited about that partnership. We're also in competition with the WAC for our Student Athlete Advisory Committee. So I want to win the toy drive. So we're going to win the toy drive and be sure that we're number one in the WAC. So we're going to start it off right. And so last but certainly not least, are you ready? What's coming up next is the basketball tournament at the Orleans. And if you know, both of our teams are starting off very well. Our women's basketball team is very competitive. We had Kansas State here on Saturday. Now, did we win? No. But here's what happened. We played them, the final score, we lost by 9. Kansas State's only lost to one team, and that's UConn. If you know a thing about women's basketball, you know UConn is major. We were competitive. And so that's what we got to have. And no other team matches up in the conference like Kansas State. So if we can do that with Kansas State, I'm excited. If we can do what we did against Illinois with our men's team when we lost the last 0.2 seconds. And so, but if we can do that, the future looks bright. So my question is, are you ready? I'm ready. Teams are ready. And we're getting ready to deal with it. They better be doing good on their finals so they can get back out there. So that's where we are. Because it's all about school. And our students are student athletes. And we're very proud of them. Thank you so much. I don't know if there are any questions.
Dr. Hendricks, other than the fact that you're a Zeta,
yes,
and
ma'am.
I'm an AKA.
Yes, ma'am.
I just want to tell you, Fabulous.
Thank you. Well, I'm a legacy, so, you know, I had to. But thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Fabulous report. Fabulous program. Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes the report from Finance and Audit, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Trustee Zoller. We will now have a facilities update. Mr. Oberson.
Good morning. My name is not Tracy Oberson, but Monique Horton. I'm the Assistant Director for Facilities. Good morning to everyone on the roster and to my esteemed colleagues. I'm here to talk about Metra. So after many years of conversation during Dr. Watson's tenure, yesterday we kicked off the Metra Station renovation project's design work. Yay, yes. So this renovation would address the current conditions which concern the entire CSU community. There was a strong dialogue regarding naming the station to include the CSU name. There are also similar dialogues regarding the CTA station that's going to be renovated for the 95th Street Red Line station. So that's also exciting. We are looking to see the increased marketing value that this is going to provide. It's going to allow increased marketing, of course, for CSU to the city and surrounding suburbs. So this particular Metra line serves communities as far north as Millennium Park, as far west as Robbins Posen, and as far south as University Park. This gives the potential students in these communities a renewed interest in riding the Metra station to CSU. So we're very excited about this. And are there any questions regarding Metra? Thank you. Being none, I'll turn it over to Tracy Oberson, Director.
Good morning, Chairman Young, Mr. President, Honorable Trustee members. I am Tracy Oberson. I have a brief addition to add to the facilities update, which regards the two projects that we have still pending, the electrical switchgear and the tunnel project. So with the electrical switchgear, we have run into a situation where the project had to come to a halt. And with that, we have the last part of the project where we call it the control panel settings. So just like if you're at home with your hot water tank, if you install it brand new and it's on the low setting, well, someone has to come and adjust it accordingly. So this is the case with some of our panels that basically supply the power throughout the building. And so those have not been set yet. And because of that, we have power outages just momentarily. We haven't had a lot, but if we're using a particular circuit and we have a lot of stuff running off of it, it tends to overload. So the CDB is working on actually doing a study to determine what all of the settings should be for all the components that were installed. And so their goal is to have that done during the month of December, of course, before we go into the winter months. Then the other one is the tunnel project. The problem we're having there is when it snows or when it rains, the water gets in the trench. And we have the steam wall that comes up, and the entire community can see it if it gets bad enough. So what they're doing there, because it was left open, is they are actually digging everything out, and they are re-insulating some of the pipe insulation that had deteriorated. That was a part of the project, but they're going to go ahead and move forward with that. And then after all of that is done, they will cover the trench up, so it will prevent any further snow or water from getting inside. And so that's the status of those two projects. And then also the one more, the RUC. We had an issue there where the boiler was installed, the temporary boiler, but we were not able to exhaust the fumes out of the building. And so again, as it came to a halt, that was not completed. So that is also being completed. So all of our projects that were left open, we are basically securing them for the winter so that everything will, you know, be safe and buttoned up. And so that's it for the projects. Other than that, I just want to add and say that we are utilizing our trades. They have done a lot of good work around campus, things that in some cases might have been formed out. You know, they're doing them in-house. We're keeping them very busy, and you know, we're really appreciating some of the things that they've done. So that's it. Any questions?
Actually, I have a question. Is there a projected completion date for those projects to be finished?
Not yet. Until the state budget is passed, we can't resume those projects. Okay. Yeah. Also, I did want to add with the snow removal. We are geared up for the snow removal. We have purchased some additional equipment at the end of last fiscal year. We have purchased our salt. We have about 85%. We'll still purchase a little bit more this month. And we have the staff that we need to handle our snow. We're still seeking out a company to come in and kind of rescue us if we get maybe over 6 inches of snow. It's kind of hard to bargain that because most of the vendors are looking to secure full contracts where they're coming out and doing snow removal at any under any condition. So we're still working on that. We have a couple of favorable companies that we believe will work with us on that. And so other than that, we will be doing the primary removal of the snow. Any other questions?
Just for the record, we have an individual, his name is Ed Malacker. He has served the university for 32 years. He will be retiring. He is the one who has provided the university with hundreds of thousands of dollars in savings due to his management of the utilities here on campus and the cost of the commodities. So we just wanted to, for the record, to mention Ed Malacker, who will be retiring after 32 years of service to the university.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Now we'll hear, have the legislative and human resources update from Mr. Wogan. I just saw him.
I think he's out in the hallway making a legislative.
There he is.
Okay, here he is.
Thomas, make an entrance.
It's a deal. The deal is made.
In fairness, it was the governor's budget director, so.
Morning.
Good morning.
Board, time for your favorite report of the day. Okay, so in terms of government affairs, today marks the 144th day without a state budget. Actually, it might be 143rd. I wrote this before we changed the date. This is by far the longest the state has ever gone past May without a budget. The previous longest shutdown was 44 days. So we are 100 days over. We're in unprecedented territory in terms of a government shutdown. And that's what we find today. As I stated in our last meeting, despite the lack of a budget, most of the state, majority of state operations continue to function. The state is spending money on payroll, on services, court orders, et cetera. It continues to also spend at a rate that does not reflect revenues. So they are spending at a rate that reflects the former income tax rate. Does not reflect the tax rate has sunset. So at this rate, it's going, we're already rapidly approaching 100% of the state dollars being spent. And if we continue to spend at this rate, it will be over 100%, and we all know what that means in terms of basic math. So public universities remain one of, you could probably argue as a system, the only significant entity to have not received any state support. As a result, we're starting to see some increased attention to the situation with universities over the past month or so. The spotlight has begun to shift towards the problems with public university system and lack of funding right now. However, a solution does not make itself apparent as we sit here today. So the university, so as of right now, there is no evidence that we're going to have a budget in this calendar year. I have spoken to many players in the game from both sides of the aisles, from the executive, from the legislature. I do not know anyone who believes that there will be a budget in January or February, and optimism does not reign over when a budget solution is going to make itself apparent. It is very realistically possible that we will go through this entire fiscal year without a state budget. That's the reality. So, university is trying to take steps to alleviate the tension, the natural tension that this situation is bringing about among students and staff as much as possible. We've made it clear we intend to start the next semester, and we are working towards solutions to finish that semester. We also continue to honor the MAP grants and merit scholarships. Obviously, the state has not provided funding on either of those. As they had in the past, MAP grants were roughly about $5 million a year. The merit scholarships were $1.6 million. So the university is essentially floating those costs, which further exacerbates our already the thin ice we already find ourselves on. So we do what we can, which is obviously we are sort of keeping calm and moving on and trying to do the day-to-day business of the university. We are also engaged in advocacy on a number of fronts. So over the past couple months, as I said, we've begun to see a bit of an increase in the media about attention about what's happening with the university. It's not near enough, in my opinion, but we're starting to at least see an increase. And so in early November, President Watson joined the presidents of the other eight universities for a second round, as it were, of talking with the legislative leaders and the governor. This was actually the first time that the governor met with all the presidents. Previously, he had had frontline staff meet with the president. So they didn't have a chance to meet with the governor. The meetings were described as generally positive. However, I can't really report that there was a significant movement in terms of the things that really matter to us about getting funding. So both the governor and the Senate minority leader at the time both pointed to January as a possible time frame without giving a lot of details about why that is. Really, since those November meetings, he said even people in the administration that I've spoken to have begun to sort of back away from that as solution. Really, no one knows what changes between now and January that would make a significant change in the dynamics that we're dealing with that leave us in this situation. So shortly after that, President Watson also gave testimony to a House Committee of the Whole. He joined the president of the U of I and the president of Western Illinois. I think the board members received links to that testimony. The testimony was very well received from legislators and legislative staff. Dr. Watson did an excellent job in terms of providing real-world examples of how this budget impasse is harming the students, and that student-centric approach was at least received as a good message. In the wake of that Committee of the Whole testimony, that drew some more attention to people sort of took notice that of the message Dr. Watson was saying, and we wound up getting a couple opportunities to express our concerns in the media, both on Chicago Tonight, on WTTW, National Public Radio, and as well as WGN. So we were able to do kind of a round of interviews to at least try to raise awareness and to get the message out that we are in an untenable situation and that people who are really going to be hurt here are the students. Shortly after that Committee of the Whole, when we were down in Springfield, the House called a bill that would have funded public universities at the same level as was originally passed in May, which is to say an 8.75% cut from the previous year, which, though not ideal, is certainly something that, given our current situation, we'd be more than happy to make work. The bill failed. It got 68 votes. It needed 71 because it required a supermajority. It was largely seen as a symbolic vote, to be honest. The Senate was not even in town to take up the bill. So it was and then the governor likely wasn't going to sign it. So it wasn't really a huge defeat because no one really believed that was the solution. Anyway, it was more just reiterating what we already knew. So the very few positive pieces here you've already heard, but I'll just reiterate, is that we were able to do something that a lot of other universities and entities have not been able to do, and that's get any capital dollars out of the state of Illinois. That is pretty hard to do, but we did so really by university, the administrative team, university-wide, making our case that, you know, we had an emergency situation on our hands. I mean, there were points where I was sending photos to the governor's office of workers in the library wearing coats and hats. And just saying, do you really want this to continue along this level? Luckily, they at least saw the light on that. What that tells me, however, is what this is a conversation we've been having a lot around here is that the only thing that seems to make the legislature really move on anything right now is the thought of a legitimate crisis or emergency. How we move forward with that understanding is something I think we need to keep discussing. But, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago, the legislature met, they were supposed to consider two items. One, a bill that gave local municipalities and lottery and some other things some necessary funds, and another for MAP grants. The MAP grant bill never got called for a vote. The sponsor said she never had the votes. The municipalities and the lottery did get their money, or at least some of it. The municipalities had essentially said, we can't salt our roads, and winter's coming. The lottery was literally becoming a joke on comedy shows, a Daily Show, et cetera. No one's getting any movement without the presence of a legitimate crisis, without real consequences in front of them. And by nature of universities, the business that we, how we've conducted our business, which we have our reasons why we've done that, it has not presented a good enough crisis to cause movement at this point. So one of the things, just one last thing in terms of legislation that I'll mention is that we've had discussions this week about the possibility of introducing a piece of legislation that would reauthorize expired piece of legislation, which would allow public universities to take out a line of credit to cover operational expenses. The original bill passed in 2010, when there was actually a small shutdown at that point, which pales in comparison to where we're at now. But Southern Illinois University at the time had a project they needed to complete, and so they passed this borrowing authorization. Obviously, borrowing is not the ideal scenario for anybody. We're offering it as a last resort, basically, as an option moving forward, because no one really knows when this is going to end. And there's no real timetable. So even the universities that maybe can say they have larger enrollments or they're better cash positions, so they can get to May, they can get to June, they can get to July, well, there's no guarantee we're at a solution at that point either. So it's, you know, between that, and I've asked the governor's office also to explore the possibility of there's some talk about using the state finance authority to issue bonds to cover state operational expenses. I've asked that, you know, could we potentially consider short-term relief for universities who need it? And they've said that they did not have it on the table prior, but they will have it on the table in discussions moving forward. So we're looking under every stone. We're looking, you know, behind every wall, trying to find any way we can to keep operations going and make sure that we're serving our students. So it's not the happiest report, but that's my report. Any questions?
Yeah, perhaps I should have asked this earlier. I think I did, and I think we talked about it, but I'm not really sure that I had an answer. Is there some reason we didn't sue the state?
It's been brought up. General Counsel Cage probably have a better idea of the conversations that have happened amongst the counselors.
Yeah, that was something that was discussed among the various general counsels, and the consensus was that we did not have a viable cause of action against the state.
Really? Yes. Everybody else did.
Well, so. Yeah. I mean, when there are legislative mandates, so Tom talked about some of the lawsuits that came about as a result of legislation. So certain university offices, departments are mandated by statute to receive support from the governor's office, the legislature. We are not one of those entities. We don't fall into that category.
I see. Okay, thank you.
And I think most of the things that fall into that category are usually where legitimate harm or death might come from lack of a service. And so I think while we know that our mission is extremely important, one of the difficult things I always have to remind myself is not only are we not the only entity that is being shortchanged here, we're not even the biggest heartstring tug in terms of, I mean, we all know how important the work that Chicago State University does here, but there's a lot of pain out there. There's a lot. And so we find ourselves, you know, no one wants, I hate to phrase it, we find ourselves competing so almost with, you know, against other human interests that we, you know, it's appalling that we have to do that, but that's where we're at.
Any other questions?
Okay, thank you.
Now we'll have our student trustee report.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
My report consists of highlights from this current semester, this fall semester. I'm going to try to go in order. On October 9th, 42 students were able to go to Washington, D.C. to participate in the Million Man March. I was one of those students who was able to go, and it was a very eye-opening experience. We had bonding. I got to meet different student leaders on campus from different organizations, and it was a really good time. We had discussions on the way back about how we were going to push for social action just within our communities, and it was a very positive experience. Also, over 30 students were able to travel to Springfield on Tuesday, October 20th. We were able to speak with state legislators and also our president of Student Government Association, Paris Griffin. She was able to write a letter to the governor, basically addressing the state of Chicago State and basically our disparities that are particular to this university. And she also came from the perspective of being a mother and like what the daycare situation would have. So that was one of the events we participated in. Also, we got to meet with President Watson numerous times over the semester, and he actually asked for SGA to basically come up with a strategy to get students to register early. So December 3rd, we actually had a registration drive, and we were able to provide incentives for students who could show proof that they registered early, and that was very well received. Also, we had a student town hall meeting this semester that students participated in, and I want to say we had more participation than we've ever had in the past, and students felt that they had representation from different departments, not just administrative, but I just want to say, like, I guess services. And so they felt that the communication was given very clearly, and they just felt ready to start for next semester. SGA made an effort to meet with students at least once a month outside of like the formal SGA meetings. So we drafted a lunch with SGA where students are able to basically address their concerns every month. So we started that. Also, representatives from SGA were very proactive, and this semester, one of our senators led our breast cancer event awareness event, and she was able to raise funds for that, and she did that in cooperation with other organizations here on campus. And also, two of our student senators and student government actually helped host the first annual Veterans Day run here on campus, and that was also well received by students. Also, seven students attended the Thurgood Marshall College Fund Leadership Institute, one of those members, Paris Griffin, she actually became a Apple HBCU scholar, and she received a $25,000 scholarship and an internship, and she also became a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated this semester. Yeah, I had to add that. But also in addition, I wanted to say that Greek life has actually grown in the past 3 years. It has grown from 13 members to 63, and 19 of those members were initiated this past fall.
Thank you.
And that will conclude my report.
You ready for the Civil Service Council update? Ms. Stewart?
Yes, we are.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So you all know I'm nervous, so take a deep breath, they told me.
First of all, I'd like to say it's kind of hard to sit in a board meeting, and I know I represent civil service, but I also work for finance. So when finance is up here, I'm cheering them on and I'm cheering everybody on. So I would like to first say good morning, and you know I had to write it down. On behalf of the Civil Service Employee Council and its members, we would like to congratulate the new board that was elected today. Is that right?
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
New officers. Okay, new officers, I apologize.
Thank you.
We also would like to thank Dr. Watson for taking the time over the years to listen to our concerns as civil service employees. We didn't meet over the summer because we had Fridays off optional, if you know, we had time. And so what we did over the summer, we went to Great America. We had a town hall meeting, which made the employees morale boost, because during the town hall meeting, they felt like they were part of the solution, not the problem at Chicago State. So this is the last month of 2015. This is the last board meeting of 2015. And this is Dr. Watson's last board meeting. So it always hurts us to lose a person who leads the pack and gets everything done. But the person who moves ahead and takes everyone else along, who builds a winning team, may make everyone strong. He's not here, but farewell, Dr. Watson. Congratulations on your retirement. Have an adventure in your new life and celebrate an end of an era and start a brand new chapter. This fiscal year, 2015, beginning in July, has been very, very difficult for civil service employees and all the administrators at Chicago State. But through the governor budget crisis, cuts of Illinois, the employees were afraid, but we work fearlessly. Through the CSU layoffs, the civil service employees work fearlessly. Through the bad media and the bad press, the civil service employees work fearlessly. We wore coats and hats to work and to show that we were dedicated to Chicago State, and we worked fearlessly. Through the killing of our children, yes, our children, the civil service employees worked fearlessly. Great leaders are almost always great signifiers who can cut through argument, debate, and doubt to offer a solution everybody can understand. Ooh, I lost the paper. Wait a minute. So the final test of a leader is that he or she leaves behind in others the conviction that will carry on. The civil service employees will carry on fearlessly and fearless.
Thank you.